either too quiet or too loud. We can't get to a happy medium.
That's not my fault.
That's 100% your fault.
Sound guys.
Let's blame our audio producer, the invisible person in the corner.
Not the talent, the tech.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
Excellent. And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
Right.
Yes. Excellent. Welcome back to the studio.
Yeah, Elise is back. We're ready to roll.
Yes.
Freshly moved into a new house.
That's
now.
That's right, yeah.
You want to give out your address right here on the podcast so we can all bring you a housewarming gift?
Listen, anybody that needs it has it, so.
That's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, look, we're aware of the criticism that last week Elise was too loud.
Right.
So.
Because we've made that criticism ourselves for what it's worth.
I would like to say that Patrick did turn my mic up.
I did.
About a quarter of the way.
Hey,
into recording.
We've got new technology. We're learning.
We're learning.
There's
technology.
A learning curve here. But can't you hear? There's no more of the like tappy tappy.
Well, not when you're tapping on your microphone.
Well, yeah, but that was to demonstrate what the tappy tappy
no
was.
More of the...
Yeah, no more of that.
Stop doing that.
And there's not as much echo, and you don't hear an air conditioner taking off like a fighter jet in the background.
Yes.
And yeah, all sorts of good things.
All good things. Yes.
I just sank it single-handedly last
week. There's less tappy-tappy because you won't follow the rules of don't bang on the table.
Right.
There's less.
Yeah. We can't not.
I talk with my hands, all right? It's not my fault.
And my fingernails specifically.
I don't have fingernails, but I talk with my hands. I pound my fists. This is how I communicate.
Be hungry.
All right, so we are continuing a series.
Yeah.
At least a two-part series.
Part two.
Maybe three.
Who knows?
Maybe seven. Who knows?
Yeah. The world is our oyster. We never know what's going to happen.
At least two. Yes, oyster. That's a callback to
a deleted scene
that we're not going to relive.
Where we bragged about the AC not being loud and talked about oysters, and then the AC came on.
That's fine. All right. Anyway, so onward we go.
Yeah, so last week we talked about what's the greatest threat to the church, within or without.
Mm-hmm.
Today we'll be talking about, is Christianity easy or hard?
Are we doing is or should?
Oh.
Yes.
Okay, cool. I just want to know a question I'm answering.
Yeah. If you had prepared, you'd know.
I feel like I'm prepared for both. I just want to give the proper answer.
Well, we'll get there. We'll explore all.
My answer is going to be the same, just to be clear. It's
so
not going to
change.
So
why does it matter?
He's just being just pedantic. Yes. Yeah. All right, let's get to some
my
news.
Spiritual gift, pedantism.
I actually have two quick bits of news for us.
News stories.
What do you want to talk about first? Zoom
the second one.
Or Houston?
Houston.
Yes.
Okay.
Hometown heroes. What do we got? Houston. H-Town. That's a thing people say, right?
Let's just wait and see what
it's about. H-Town? Is that a thing?
Space City.
Yeah.
So in
Space City.
A suburb here in Houston.
Hey, we're a suburb here in Houston.
Mm-hmm. This past Monday.
Is it our suburb?
Something exciting happened.
I don't think so.
A tiger was on the loose.
I did hear about this.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
thankfully, it was not my suburb.
It was not your suburb. Yes. Tiger in the streets.
Cool. Okay. Like real, like big tiger too, not like baby tiger.
Yeah.
Big, yes, a big old tiger.
Bingle?
Oh, I thought you said a big old.
Big old tiger.
A big old bingle, I think.
A big old tiger.
That's the Joe Exotic pronunciation of bingle.
Yes, a tiger in the streets.
That there's a big old tiger.
Yeah.
Lured back inside by a Victor Hugo Service. Who's 26.
Victor Hugo. Yes. All right.
Service is his last name. Hugo's his middle name.
Still, Victor Hugo.
I mean,
sure.
He could do worse.
Right. He and then put it in his Jeep Cherokee and fled the scene.
So it got loose. He coaxed it back inside, called it back into the house or whatever.
Yes.
Put it in the Jeep Cherokee and drove away.
Yeah.
And fled the scene.
I'm going to guess this was not a legally kept tiger.
No.
What makes you think that, Elise?
One, because it's a tiger.
Right. Let's listen to your investigative skills here.
One, suburb. Two, tiger. Three, fleeing the scene.
It's also a rental home. So.
Is it? Maybe it's a rental tiger.
Yes.
Four, Victor Hugo.
Is Victor Hugo?
I want to know, did he put down a pet deposit for this tiger?
Excellent question.
Does he get it back if he flees?
Ooh, yeah.
That's the good question.
Depends on what the tiger did to the house,
How's
right?
How's the carpet?
Yeah. Maybe the carpet's fine. Maybe the tiger was house trained.
I think if you have a tiger in your home, you're the pet. Like, historically.
What does that litter box look like?
You don't want to clean that. You don't want to clean that litter box.
He also had two monkeys.
Sure. Did he flee the scene with the monkeys?
No, monkeys got left behind, which is pretty rude.
Wow.
Well, but you can't put the monkeys in. Haven't you ever done the puzzle where you try to get the fox and the chicken and the chicken feet all across the river? You can't put the monkeys in the Jeep Cherokee.
They're all arguing about who gets shotgun. Right. It's a total mess, you know? Like, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the monkeys are, you know, backseat drivers.
I've seen Life of Pi. I know what happens when an orangutan and a tiger face off in a lifeboat. Yeah, I get it.
So here's the question I have.
I actually read Life of Pi. I didn't even see the
movie. Oh, humble brag.
Yeah, that's true.
He read the book, ladies and gentlemen. I did.
Take that, world.
He hit the little Pizza Hut button.
Yeah. Dude, speaking of which, we need to bring that back for adults. I've seen this like, moving around.
Yeah.
Yeah, summer reading programs for adults. I am on board.
Same.
What local restaurants want to give me free stuff for reading books? I'm in.
Or we could start our own. Where we just read stuff and then we go out for beers.
Yeah, but I want them for free. So will you buy me beers if I read books?
1 week out of every, you know, three that we're meeting.
Cool, I'll do that. Yeah,
okay. Is this our book club here?
This is our new summer reading program.
Yeah. Okay. Beyond Sunday book club.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. He has been, now he's now in custody. Tiger is not.
Oh.
That's concerning.
Tiger.
Nobody knows.
Oh, God.
Ooh.
Could be in your suburb.
Ooh.
Could be in your house right now.
It would.
The tiger is at your front door.
Yeah. So here's my question.
Yeah.
How many?
You only
my,
have one.
How many of my neighbors have tigers?
Yeah.
Excellent question.
Yeah. We were talking about this with a friend actually the other night, and he lives in New York City, and he said probably a lot was his answer, because
how many people does he think has tigers?
Well, listen. Apparently, they confiscated a kangaroo from
that's not a tiger
a Brooklyn apartment.
Uh huh.
And this is like a frequent thing. A lot of the animals in the Brooklyn Zoo are there because they were confiscated from apartments.
I mean, I believe
apartments.
I believe that. But I also don't think that means that a lot of my neighbors have tigers.
I do know this fun fact here for you.
A lot is relative.
There are more tigers in private ownership in Texas than there are in the wild.
That is concerning for the state of tigers.
Yes.
Yes.
Hopefully that means that like the state of tigers in the wild is so bad that like there's not
that
many.
We don't want that either.
No, yeah, yeah. It's concerning for the state of tigers.
Hopefully those tigers are going extinct.
I'm not saying that's good. I'm just saying that hopefully number is so low that it's a low bar to get over to have more in private ownership. I don't want there to be like, oh, there's like 10,000 tigers in the wild and there's like 20,000 in private ownership.
Well, no,
I think
that's about
Texas.
What it is though, right?
Like, it's something astronomical.
Yeah,
it's
crazy. Oof. Yeah.
But here's the question.
That's no bueno.
My other question, if you were going to have an exotic animal living in your home, what would you want?
Exotic animal in my home. Yeah. I would want one that couldn't kill me.
Sure. One you could take in a fight is always a good idea.
Sure.
Yeah.
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 Or that's just not going to fight me, right? Like
any animal has the potential to fight you.
Do I have fantasies about being Princess Jasmine with Raja? Yes, absolutely.
Sure. Who doesn't?
100%.
Yeah. Yes.
I kind of want a deer though.
A deer?
Yeah.
Okay. A male deer or a female deer?
Oh, I hadn't thought about it that much.
Yeah. A doe or a buck?
I really want to say something right here that I'm not going to say. I will think about it and get back to
that's
you.
Fine.
I also want a fennec fox.
Okay.
I don't know what a fennec. Oh, the big fox.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Some kind of bird, maybe.
That's so boring.
No, that's a terrible idea. I don't
yeah,
want
that's
bird.
The
some
worst
kind of
option.
Bird, maybe.
I was thinking I could like put it in a cage and.
Wow.
I don't, I don't want an animal in my house. I don't want one.
You don't like pets.
Yeah, we've established this based on your feel good story about the dog.
I would definitely go with. An otter. That's my spirit animal is an otter.
Yeah.
Or a panda. So.
Panda could be fun.
Red or classic.
I don't want red. Get out of here. Classic.
Reds are cute.
Classic or nothing.
Red or the police model.
Or the Chinese. Well, they're all Chinese. Yes.
Okay.
Good Lord.
Yes. All right. Let's move to our next story.
We have another story?
Yeah, I gave you.
We just spent 15 minutes on that one.
Tigers
right.
or Zoom.
What do you got?
Houston or Zoom. Here we go. This one, we'll zoom through here.
Oh. It's about Zoom, at least. That's why that was a pun.
Yeah, I'll just read you the headline here.
Because
I think
shoulder.
It's hilarious. Ohio State Senator caught driving during Zoom call as House considered distracted driving bill.
He had a background on that made it look like it was his living room, in air quotes, right?
Yes.
But you could see his seatbelt in the shot.
Love that.
And in the window of his living room, trees and stuff kept whizzing by.
So easy to get elected.
Yes, he put a... Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your faith in the... And yes, as that day, I don't think during this one meeting, but that day, they were voting on distracted driving.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he was in a meeting on distracted driving. I can't vouch for that, but yes. There was
He's
something
like, well, I wasn't looking at the screen, so it's fine.
Yeah. He was looking at the screen because we have it on camera with him looking at the screen.
Zoom has a driving mode. Like, just driving mode, and then you can listen, and you're muted, and you know you don't like see anybody, and you can like touch a little thing to talk, just like you're talking on a phone.
Yep.
This feature exists.
I think it's fair to say technology. That he probably has just like enough base level knowledge of Zoom to like make it work and put the background on, but not enough to understand that like, hey, that background is not foolproof. Then people can
just turn off the video.
Your seatbelt. Right.
Yeah.
Or just don't drive like while you're Zooming or texting or on the, like just you know be safe when you're in cars, people.
That is a good idea.
Is that too much to ask for us to all just take it down a notch?
Do you use a Zoom background for your meetings?
I have come to start using the blur background because I think it just kind of crisps it up, keeps everybody's focus right on me where I want it.
Right here on this beautiful mug.
But no, I don't typically use a regular background.
Elise, you use a Zoom background?
No, I don't. I haven't. I don't know how to use.
I like my rooms. I like people. I like the little window into my soul of my back office.
I sometimes like to use little office confessional from the office.
Oh, sure.
As the background. Yeah. Or when we're doing staff meetings and I'm in my office and it's really cold, sometimes I'll turn it to a snowscape just to be passive aggressive to our office manager.
Sure. Right. Which he really appreciates. It makes for a fun staff Zoom meeting. Yeah.
And then I guess back in January, I had the Four Seasons landscape as my background for a bit too.
Sure. Who doesn't want that?
Because that was the funniest story in the world to me. Right. So. All right. But this guy, I'll give you what Mr. Brennan here, the representative, said. I was paying attention to the driving and listening to it. Mm-hmm. I had two meetings that were back to back that were in separate locations. I actually been on other calls, numerous calls while driving. Phone calls for the most part, but on video calls, I'm not paying attention to the video. To me, it's like a phone call. So I like how he says hey, it's no big deal. I do this all the time.
Yeah. Just. And by the way, I voted no for the bill. Thank you. Yes.
P.S.
Yeah.
Yes. That's always a good one.
Do we know which part of Ohio he represents? I want to know if any of my family is responsible for the election of this person.
Ooh, we didn't make any Ohio jokes yet.
No, that is missed though.
Yeah. Opportunity.
Yes. Yeah, that is a good question. This seems, I don't know, all of it.
Somewhere in Ohio.
Yeah. Okay. Where are you from?
Where am I from? Kettering, Dayton.
Oh, that's where he represents, Kettering.
Yeah, look at that. Not true. That's
may be true. I don't know.
What t-shirts did we find that said, Harry Potter hates Ohio?
Yes.
Harry Potter does not hate
Ohio. I did find that shirt online. I wanted to buy it, but it was $20 before shipping. And I'm
not worth it.
Yeah.
It kind of was, but yeah.
You could make that shirt yourself for less than that.
I don't know if I could.
You know enough people who have a Cricut or whatever. You can find somebody who would make it for you.
There's a print shop, a t-shirt print shop up near me that I've driven past a couple times.
Fair enough. Maybe I'll work on it.
There's a guy with a van. I'm sure he'd get
If any listeners out there want to Venmo me $25 so I can buy a Harry Potter Hates Ohio.
Just to mock Pastor
just
David.
Just to wear it to events here to mock Pastor David.
We could do a bulk order if the listeners want to buy one as well.
Ooh, there you go.
Yes.
On Sunday, GoFundMe.
At Patrick.Nazaroff. That's my Venmo. So there you go. Let's move on to our main topic.
Is Christianity...
Or should Christianity...
Yeah, one of those. Either of those.
Do the same answer.
Be hard or easy. Yes. Okay.
All right, we'll start there. Is Christianity easy or hard?
Both.
Ooh. Twist.
Fence sitter.
What was your answer?
I would say it should be hard.
Oh. Should be hard, but what is it?
I think if we're doing Christianity the way it's intended to be done, it's hard.
Okay. How about is 2021 American Christianity easy or hard?
Easy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's start there.
Yeah. Costs me nothing to say I'm a Christian and, maybe go to a church every once in a while and say, oh, yeah, that's my church home and I'm a Christian and that's cool. Costs me zero. Nothing in relational capital. Nothing in personal, potentially even brings me things, right? If I'm a business and I say, we're a Christian, whatever other thing. Yep. Some people will choose me because of that. Could potentially be bringing me business. Sure. I could benefit from it more than it will cost me anything.
Yep.
Okay. Let's talk about this idea of Christianity being easy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What's easy about it? Well, you mentioned the cost. What else?
What do you mean? I mentioned the cost.
You say it costs you nothing.
Yeah, it costs me nothing. Yeah.
Are there any other things that we'd say this is why it's easy to be a Christian in America in 2021?
I mean, I would say aside from cultural factors, mm-hmm. I think in some ways Christianity is the most natural thing in the world, right? I mean, it's your relationship with your creator, which should be, I think, natural and life-giving and full of joy. So in that aspect, I think... it can be easy.
I don't argue with that, right?
Except you do. I feel it coming.
It's not an argument with what you said. It's an addendum to what you said. I think in the United States, we're not focused on Christianity from that perspective, right? Christianity, I think, is, from my perspective, is easy in the United States because we don't take seriously all of the pieces of Christianity mm-hmm. that make it hard. We see something that yeah. makes Christianity hard, and we're like, I'm just want to be, you know, have joy with my creator, I guess. Yeah. And so I'm yeah. going to, you know, focus on that instead. Yeah. And instead of like looking at the things that make it really challenging, like all the places where Jesus tells you to give away most of your stuff, or all the places yeah. where Jesus tells you to mm-hmm. love your enemies, or yeah. all the places where, you know, we conveniently look past those things. And so culturally, it is very easy for me to say I'm sure. a Christian.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think we talked about, I don't know how many episodes ago, but in the Southern Christianity episode, we talked about the South particularly being Christ haunted. And I think yeah. that yeah. is maybe applies to oh, sure. American yeah, yeah. Christianity as a whole.
I can hear
it's
that.
It's like, it's just part of your cultural background. It's part of your cultural yeah. currency. It's just there. You don't have to sacrifice mm-hmm. for it. You just are brought yeah. right into it.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of, you know, children and you know, people growing up in the United States, you're born into Christianity, mm-hmm. right? Most people, even like people who would say they had a believer's baptism or whatever, most people didn't just come to it out of nowhere. Most people were raised in the faith in some context. There certainly sure. are people who come to it later in life who have not experienced it as a child, but that's
yeah.
the lesser end of the story, right? And so there's a huge cultural piece that moves us in that direction. But by, if we take being Jewish in Israel, right, or being, you know, Muslim in Palestine, you can take the other side of that too. You're born into that in the same kind of way, but it still mm-hmm. costs you a lot more to have that identity, to mm-hmm. have that marker as part of who you are, and to claim that. It does not cost you anything in the United States. There's yeah. there is nothing hard about walking around and saying, "Yeah, I'm a Christian."
I agree. So, but I don't think culturally that's going to change. You know, at least not dramatically in the near future. Sure. You know? So we can
you
say,
get time off from work, whether you're a Christian or not. You get time off for work for Christian holidays.
Yeah. 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 So part of that, maybe we can explore here. Part of what we've made Christianity easy is have churches made Christianity easy, not just the culture. We can't just say, hey, the culture makes it easy for you. Our church is making it easy for
yes,
you.
Yes, because we're allowing that culture to absolutely. Yeah. We're a part of that.
And so we, you know, like,
not me, other churches.
We are church workers. right. Yes.
Other churches.
2/3 of us are church workers. Yeah. We all are members of churches. So it kind of leads us to this idea of like, are we part of that problem?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Churches have absolutely made decisions to make faith easier because we want it to be palatable, because we want people to be in our pews, because we want people to fund our budgets, to pay our staff, to do the stuff that we want to do. And mm-hmm. so we have absolutely been a part of the problem to try to make church easier and faith easier so that it can be more palatable.
I kind of want to draw a distinction here that the accessibility of faith is not necessarily a bad thing.
No, of course
you
not.
Know, I think the fact that we have a culture where, you know, Christianity is the norm and in some ways it is the more difficult choice to deviate mm-hmm. from that.
Yeah.
Is that necessarily a bad thing for Christianity in general? I don't know. I just think that accessibility itself is not really the problem. It's the watering down and the leaving out bits mm-hmm. and the expectation that it is going to be the easy choice is yeah. the problem.
Sure.
You know, when you get into a lot of discipleship models, right, when people mm-hmm. start talking about how to help people enter into this life of faith, there are a lot of different ways of going around this, but one piece of language that I find helpful is this idea of invitation and challenge. Mm-hmm. And I think largely we've allowed churches to become highly invitational, right? And not necessarily in the literal sense, because as Lutherans, we are kind of historically bad at inviting people to church. But we are highly invitational in that we want to make it as accessible, as available to people mm-hmm. as possible. But then we forget to bring in that challenge to yeah. say, this changes your life and something else is required, not required, something else is called upon you because your mm-hmm. life has changed, right? Mm-hmm. You know, when I was younger, my life was changed when my parents gave me certain gifts, right? When my parents gave me my first car, my life was changed and things were expected of me because of that gift, right? I was expected to drive responsibly and to, you know, pay for this, that, and the other and be aware of how I was at work in the world. Those things were expected of me because of the gift that I was given. There are things that are expected after the invitation happens. And I think we forget that challenge piece a lot.
Absolutely. I think that historically the church has done not a great job yeah. with that aspects of these things.
Well, particularly in the last like 50 years, let's say, like, yeah,
sure.
I think there have been points where the church has been much higher on the challenge side of things. And there are churches that are, but I think in the last 50 years, that's where I would mm-hmm. emphasize that. Yeah.
So let me ask you why.
I'm sorry. I'm going to rephrase that because I just realized that 50 years only gets us back to like 1970.
I know.
Last
yeah.
70 years, because I really meant to go back to the 1950s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry.
So let me ask you why. Why did we change?
Why did we become highly invitational?
And less challenging.
And less challenging because I think we I think we were acquiescing to a culture. Mm-hmm. And rather than allowing our faith to drive the culture, we allowed the culture to drive the direction of the church. And so we acquiesced to demands of capitalism. We acquiesced to demands of people who had other things to do with their time and wanted less time to do with the church. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to have to be at Bible study every week. I don't want to have to do this, that, or the other. I don't want to have to give my money to the poor or to mm-hmm. that. And so we said, okay, well, what this really means, or okay, well, we can do it this way. And we kept acquiescing because we were afraid of losing people. It's rooted in fear mm-hmm. and scarcity. I think we were afraid of losing people. Rather than proclaiming the gospel and letting the gospel change people's lives.
Is it possible that the things that we were challenging on 70 years ago were the wrong things to challenge on, though?
Maybe. I don't know what, I wasn't around in the church 70 years ago, so I don't know what the church was challenging on.
Throw that out there. I think there was a shift for a reason as well, and maybe, like you said, a lot of it was probably, acquiescing to capitalism and mm-hmm. yada, 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 and being afraid to lose members. But maybe a piece of that was the things that we were challenging, or the way that we were challenging, was not appropriate or helpful.
Yeah, that's certainly a legitimate thing, right?
Sure. We can't say that. 60, 70 years ago was also the height of the civil rights movement.
It seems like it was, I hear people who are older talk about the 50s being this great time. And to me, I'm like, oh, it was a great time to be straight, white, right. Protestant, sure. Catholic, yeah. middle class, kind of thing. Not like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't want to harken back and say, oh, 70 years ago was the heyday of the church. Like, I don't think that's true either. But I think that we've seen this move of we're really terrified of losing people and trying to acquiesce to that. I think that's been heightened in that period of time.
Well, it seems like so many of these things are like swings or just reactions to things, the mm-hmm. extremes that are going on at the time, right? And then, 50 years later, you swing a different direction and it's kind of back and forth.
Yeah, I do. Actually, I think that's really helpful to think, this is a pendulum, and we... Maybe the greater root of this is that the church has been reacting to the pendulum rather than stepping back and seeing the pendulum for what it is.
Be the pendulum.
You don't want to be the pendulum, but you want to see the pendulum for what it is and exist outside of the pendulum, right? You want to be able to say, wherever this pendulum is swinging, we continue to be the church. And we respond appropriately to the pendulum, but we're not changed by the pendulum, right? Because ultimately culture, over the last 2,000 years of Christianity, culture has shifted on that pendulum swing back and forth dozens, hundreds of times, maybe. Mm-hmm. But the church, that is the faith in Jesus Christ, the body of Christ, should be the same now, tomorrow, and always. Mm-hmm. And so we are not impacted by the pendulum, but we see the pendulum for what it is.
Yeah. So, I think part of this, because I think we're all going to land on the same idea. Like, is Christianity easy or hard? Yeah, it's easy here in America. Yeah. Should it be hard? Yeah.
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 I think we look at the teachings of Jesus. They are not easy teachings.
Yeah.
The command to love our enemies, the command to what we do for the least of these, mm-hmm. we did to Jesus. Mm-hmm. The list in that parable in Matthew 25 is really exhausting and really hard. And I can say I do not live up to it.
Yeah.
There are plenty of times I see the least of these and I do nothing.
Yep.
And by the words of Jesus, I'm ignoring Jesus in our world.
Well, even if you just take it very simply to when Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, love your neighbor as yourself, and this is the fullness of the gospel, or whatever, you probably know the exact.
You're good. Words. You got it. Yeah, but you're there.
That in and of itself is exhausting, mm-hmm. Like that's almost maybe an impossible standard, but that is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And we do not focus on that at all.
Yeah. Well, I think even, James and John, the disciples of Jesus, will ask Jesus, hey, we want to be your right-hand dudes.
Yeah.
Let's do this. We're committed to you. And Jesus tells them, you need to count the cost.
Yeah.
Before you can say that, you really need to evaluate what that's going to do. And so part of this acquiescing to the culture or to your people for churches, I don't think we've ever had a count the cost moment when it comes to being a follower of Christ. I can probably say never in any church I've been to, any small group I've been to, when you get there the first time, they're like, hey, before you really commit to us, you should really evaluate your life and say, what are you willing to sacrifice for this place? And if you're not, this may not be the place for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like this may not be the group for you. This may not be the church for you. This may not be the community for you, because if you're not willing to count that cost, I'm not really sure this is it. So we've made Christianity cheap.
Yeah. We're doing our confirmation interviews right now, right? So we've got our students who are affirming their faith as eighth graders, saying we've gone through this process and we're taking ownership of our faith. I've been in, three or four of them now. You've done even more than I have this year. Neither of us have asked them, hey, what are you willing to sacrifice for your faith? You know, how is this going to radically change who you are and how you are at work in the world? And, you know, we touch on that. We try to get on how does this shape your life? How do you, you know, how is your, and that's all good. And, you know, they're eighth graders. They're figuring things out in the world, but yeah, we're not asking them to count that cost. And in some ways, I think the church, and by the church, I mean individual congregations, right, have counted that cost and said, whether it's conscious or subconscious, we'd rather do it this way, right? We've counted the cost and that's too risky, so we're going to do it this way instead.
Sure. I think frequently we think of that sacrifice as like, oh, what are you willing to sacrifice? Like losing your life or your wealth or whatever. Yeah. But so frequently it's not that, you know, I think it's more of shifting who you are as a person, your reactions, putting aside more selfish reactions for selfless reactions. I think that's more of a daily cost that we don't really emphasize.
Yeah.
We think about the big stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you've talked about this on the podcast before, Patrick, that we have, you know, the Ten Commandments plastered all over courthouses, but we don't have anything about the Beatitudes, which would be like Jesus's instructions. And, you know, that's, if we want to be followers of Jesus, that's what we should really be striving for and living up to. Right. And, you know, we have nothing about blessing the poor or blessing the meek or blessing the lowly or the, you know, mourning or others who are listed in that. There's seven of them.
Cool. Easy.
There's seven. All right. There's seven of them.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I remember, you know, back in like the 1999 horrific school shooting happened in Columbine.
Yeah.
And part attached to that was an aspect of faith. This was, you know, where one of the girls was asked, are you a follower of Jesus? She said yes and lost her life.
Right.
Yeah.
And that sprung forward, I think, for youth groups all across the country, major issues of martyrdom, of like, are you willing to die for your faith? And a lot of teenagers answering, you know, yes, I think that.
Yeah.
And I think part of what makes that appealing is also it's like really a one-time decision.
Right.
And it's like this big dramatic moment of faith. Like it's almost like a story, you know, in our mind, because it happens so rarely. It's so far away for that to actually even be an actual thing. Mm-hmm. It feels like poetic to do something like that.
Yeah,
but we're not asking kids like, okay, are you willing to serve those that you really do not love?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you willing to challenge yourself to go to communities that make you uncomfortable?
Yeah.
Are you willing to, you know, wake up every day to, you know, do these really, really hard things that Jesus asks us to do? Loving your enemies, and for all of us, those are different groups of people. And that is like, I don't think I am.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm just not willing or interested in doing that.
Yeah.
Because it's like we've kind of been talking about, it's easy. So let's maybe say transition here of like, what parts of Christianity have we made too easy? And are there parts of Christianity we've made too hard?
Yes, and we're focusing on American Christianity still here.
Yeah, I mean, we're Americans. Yeah, you know, so.
True, I am. Do you need to see my Social Security card to prove my
citizenship?
Yeah, I do. I would like to see it.
Yes.
Along with your bank account statement.
Hold on.
What's your birthday, Social Security card, your pet's first name?
We already know your password from a previous episode.
You know, one number in my password. Anyway, so what have we made too hard? That was the question.
And too easy.
What have we made too hard? What have we made too easy?
Yeah.
Oh, I think that we've emphasized a lot of rules-based stuff and just really made that too hard for people. Mm,
say more about that.
I think that we have overcomplicated grace to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've made it dependent on your actions and your level of repentance versus freely offered grace.
Yeah.
End of story. I think we've really, really created a subculture of us always comparing our actions or our misdeeds to other people's around us and being like, okay, well, you know, I've got, at least I'm not doing that, you know?
Yeah. I didn't kill anybody.
Right. Yeah. Right. So who cares if I lie or whatever, you know?
I didn't commit adultery. I just looked at porn. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we've sort of created a weird subculture from that, which maybe, you know, came from a good place of like, yeah, you know, there are things we should and should not be doing. That's not really a complete thought, but I think that aspect of it, I think we've made too hard.
Yeah, that's interesting. The too hard piece, I'm gonna have to keep thinking about that. I think for me, if we're thinking about what have we made too easy, as you're kind of asking that second half of the question, I think being a part of a church community in some ways is too easy.
Yeah.
You know, I heard someone talking about this the other day, and I'm still playing with this language, but I like where this is going initially, that if we should think more of the church community in like levels almost, and, mm-hmm. and not that the levels are like ranked as better than other, but like there's levels of commitment. Like you've got, you know, people who are kind of in a part of the community, who are, you know, floating around and see, and maybe you're seeing them on Sundays and that, mm-hmm. and then maybe they're going to be gone one day and that's fine. And maybe they're going to be back and maybe they're not. And then as you get closer and closer, you have increasing levels mm-hmm. of commitment, right? And so if you are, whatever you want to call it, let's call it a commitment member or something like mm-hmm. that. You know, if you're a commitment member of a religious community, there are things that you say, yes, I'm going to do these things that cost me something, whether mm-hmm. that's monetary or time or the way I live in the world, whatever. It's going to be noticeable to people that I am living differently because I'm a part of this community. And mm-hmm. then those levels of commitment kind of decrease as you move out from that circle, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe you have a congregation of like 600 people, but maybe you've got 75 to 100 who are in that like, yeah, we are committed to this place. And then maybe you've got another 200 that are in kind of this other line of like, I'm really committed to this place, but I'm still feeling things out and trying to understand what that means for me. Mm-hmm. I don't think we do a good job of breaking that down for people. Mm-hmm. I think we expect people to walk in the door and to be at the same place with their level of commitment to a building that someone else has been for 25 years. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, we make that in some ways, we make that process too easy. Mm-hmm. But then I think if we're talking about things that are hard, I think we do put up roadblocks. I think we put things up that stop people from being able to experience the fullness of God's grace intentionally mm-hmm. or otherwise. We think we're protecting things and we put up blocks that prevent people from seeing that.
I think I want to go back to that idea of like this levels of commitment.
Yeah.
And I think part of what we make that too easy on ourselves is like for too long churches, like in some ways, like trying to deceive themselves with how effective they actually mm-hmm. are.
Yep.
I mean, I've been a part of churches or gone to churches where you're like, where they're talking about like, we have 2,000 members of this church.
Sure.
And then you go there on Sunday morning and there's 200 people.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you're like, well, who cares how many people are on your internet roster?
Right.
That's not the same level as in your actual building on mm-hmm. a Sunday morning. Those are two different numbers. Mm-hmm. And so, but like, it's less impressive to myself or to the, you know, whomever I'm talking to.
Yeah, to the
say,
ether.
We have 200 people on Sunday morning. It's 2,000, it's a bigger number. We should find
must be better.
Find that biggest number got and like throw that out there. And so that kind of means like what would churches maybe do better instead of saying we have X people on our rosters or attached to us in some way of asking how many people are committed, are engaged in a program outside of Sunday morning worship at our at our church. That are what percentage of people who come to Sunday morning worship are doing something else, whatever that something else is. Then that might be a better effective measuring tool and a better effective, like that's a thing to work on and grow. If you're just growing a list of names, then you could do that and be completely ineffective on serving your community.
Right. Because is anybody on that list actually being changed by the gospel? Right. I think that's the standard that we should be judging our own faith by, right? Not that we're, you know, need to be judging one another, but like we should be asking ourselves, how is my faith changing how I live in the world? Because ultimately Jesus was offering a path for people to be changed. That was, you know, what Jesus was saying is like, there's another way to live in the world. There's another way to exist. And so if our faith is not leading us in a way that causes us to experience that change, then we should be rethinking how we're doing faith.
Yeah. I think too, I speak as the Lutheran Church, we have not done a good job of sometimes challenging our people. And this is the things we've made hard. We tried to make that easy to actually witness our faith.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I think this is something we've kind of like said, like, hey, we believe in grace. We want people to, you know, come to grace on their own, you know, come to Jesus and experience the goodness of grace, but they should just come on their own to Sunday morning. And then when they're in the building, we'll definitely get them some grace, you know, like, but even then, like, I've been part of so many, you know, meetings, even here at Lord of Life, where we constantly say, like, are we a welcoming congregation? And everybody at the meeting and they're like, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we say that because, like, you go here, you know people here, people you know say hi to you.
Right. That's like saying to your family reunion, are we a welcoming family reunion?
Yeah.
Does everyone in our family feel welcome here?
Yeah.
Yeah. We all feel good. We're good. We're a welcoming family. Right. Cool.
Yeah.
Like, nobody actually wants to be here at this reunion, but. Right.
Then Meghan Markle shows up and ruins everything.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah. But I think that like self-inventory is not that helpful. Like,
right. Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Like what happens when somebody who doesn't know anybody walks in the building is somebody not only just like an assigned greeter saying hello to them and handing them a piece of paper with an order of service, but it's somebody saying like, how can I help you?
Yeah.
Or come and join us for worship.
Right.
And I know obviously COVID protocols make that a little difficult.
Yeah. Right.
But how can we have that experience of like, oh, you're new here? Sit with me and my family. We will help you through a service you may have never experienced before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said this in a sermon once. I think this is still true, right? There's, I don't know, 95, 97, 99% of churches are all going to say they're a welcoming congregation, right? No church out there is like, you know what? We really don't want to welcome
people.
We're not welcoming. Yeah. Like nobody says that, but there are a lot of churches who live that.
Yes.
And there are a lot of churches who, in spite of their welcome statement and their welcome banner, do nothing to demonstrate a sense of welcome to people who walk in for the first time. And so in that way, I think those particular congregations are making faith in Christianity very hard, because I think we're putting up a boundary of not welcoming those people in. Mm-hmm. But genuinely welcoming people should also be hard, right? Yeah. We should not feel like, oh, welcoming people so easy. We're probably not doing it right if we think that welcoming new people is so easy.
Yeah,
for sure. And I think we're also kind of like relying on like, we are the most welcoming congregation as long as they come to us.
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
As long as they awkwardly come into a building they've never been in before to be a part of a worship service they've never seen before, we will gladly be welcoming.
Yeah, you know? I mean, to be honest, I'm not sure I would notice if somebody who had like never been here before walked in the door. I just don't think I would notice.
Well, and that's one of that's one of the challenges of being a large-ish congregation, right? We're not necessarily in like a large congregation category, but a large enough congregation that you don't know everybody here. And I mean, even as a pastor who's been here for 4 years at this point, right? There are people that walk in on a Sunday morning, I'm like, all right, 6-1 and pick them whether or not I'm supposed to know who this person is or not, right? And you know, that's just the nature of the beast. And those are challenges. There's some level of, hey, you know, if we want to be genuinely welcoming, then you who have been here for 25 years need to be as comfortable being welcomed like a stranger, because someone might not know you and might welcome you thinking that you're new. Yeah. You need to be as comfortable with it and forgiving for that as someone who's walking in the door for the first time. That you need to put yourself in the place of being. And maybe that's more what I've been trying to get at here. I think those of us in the building need to be more willing to be uncomfortable and to be challenged and to have our faith be hard so that it can be easier for those who are not yet in the door.
Yeah.
It needs to be as easy as possible for people to come in and experience faith for the first time. And that is going to mean that our faith is going to be more challenging.
Yeah.
Because if I, if we think about the worship service, sorry, I'm on a bit of a roll. Do I have time to do this?
No.
You know, but if we think about the worship service, right? If I, as someone who's been coming to worship my entire life, come to worship and expect worship to feed me and be exactly the way I want it to be, then everybody else who shows up is going to be people like me. Mm-hmm. If I want my congregation to be a community that grows and challenges people, I need to be willing to say, I don't need to go to a worship service that always feeds me 100% of the time the way I want it to. Yeah. I am willing to come to a worship service that does things I don't like because I know other people can enter into that process. I need to be willing to make faith hard for myself in that way. And frankly, in the grand scheme of how faith might be hard in the world, coming to a worship service where maybe we play a song you don't like should not be that hard, right? No one is threatening your life. No one is saying you're going to be arrested if you walk out of this building with that Bible, right?
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of, not that we need to like compare horror stories of how terrible our, you know, whatever. But in the grand scheme of things, we just need to put that in perspective, that it's okay for our faith to make us uncomfortable, or for us to be uncomfortable in our faith if we remember we are doing it because we love our neighbors, like Elise was talking about earlier. I'll call back to what Elise said.
Sure, sure.
That was really weird. We should have just stopped there.
Yes. And that's the podcast, ladies.
That's right.
Goodbye. Thank you for listening.
I think what you said there, I think really resonates for the church. And I think this is probably where this conversation was always kind of maybe sometimes destined ahead. And I'm glad we landed on there.
Excellent.
This idea that like we have made it easy for insiders at the expense of making it hard for outsiders when it should be the opposite way.
Preach.
Yeah. And so, and that's maybe is that church acquiescing to ourselves of like, how can it be as easy as possible for us? And that makes it really, really hard for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, Elise, you kind of mentioned like a rules-based morality mm-hmm. that sometimes happens in church. And I would maybe even argue that is kind of making it actually easy on ourselves and hard on others at the same time.
That too. Yeah. It's like you spin your wheels and you don't actually end up getting anywhere in terms of transformation of faith mm-hmm. or anything. Mm-hmm. You just make a rubric or a grading system for people in which you can judge other people.
Yeah.
And pat yourself on the back.
I do like a good rubric that allows me to judge others.
I know you do.
Because I think oftentimes when we make those rules, you know, that rules-based morality, most of those rules are like, these are things I'm kind of naturally doing anyway.
Of course.
Like, no, not me. No.
There's nothing I'm actually having to do differently with my own life. But there are challenges for people who don't have those natural instincts or the natural part of who they are. So whether that is like, hey, God is really in favor of straight marriage. Mm-hmm. That's really, really easy for me because I'm in a straight marriage. It costs me nothing to follow that rule.
Right.
You say that to a member of your congregation who's 16 and unsure about their sexuality. Mm-hmm. That's a huge cost to follow that rule, for your congregation. And so, that's pretty easy for me. So that should be a rule, and it's easy to like, that says that here in the book of Leviticus, boom, there you go. There's other rules in the book of Leviticus. So we could say like, if we really included those would be really hard.
Yeah. We should always cherry pick scripture, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, cherry or apple, take your pick. which fruit would you prefer to pick?
But I mean, like in reality, like when we get to like that, the stuff, sometimes we get to like, oh, the stuff about homosexuality, that clearly matters today. The stuff about like mixed fabrics, irrelevant.
Right.
Because that would actually affect my life on some level.
Right. I would not be able to wear any of I'd be naked right now. Yeah. And nobody wants that.
None of the clothes
that,
I could
so.
Buy at Target would do anything.
Right.
I'm not sure Harry Potter Hates Ohio is on a 100% cotton tee.
You can't have that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great point, right? Yeah. I think, we've all made choices. And I think that's what this is now going in the direction of biblical literalism a little bit. We all have made selections about which parts of the Bible we emphasize and don't. Some of us are just more open about admitting that we've made selections about which part of the Bible even those who say I'm a biblical literalist, well, unless you're walking around with clothing of all one fabric, mm-hmm. with your beard grown, with your hair in a certain way, wearing the thing on your forehead and stoning people who have committed adultery and whatever, unless that's what you're doing, then you also are selecting your pieces of scripture. Mm-hmm. But we've all been duped into thinking that some of us are not.
Yeah.
And some of us are more honest about saying, yes, we're selecting pieces of scripture because we're trusting the Spirit to lead us in this process of understanding how scripture is calling us to be active in our life. Now, that's me giving a very, very rose-colored glasses tint to my own personal view, obviously. But I think that's important for us to note as well.
So I want to get back to this idea of, okay, we've made it hard for outsiders, mm-hmm. easy for insiders, as we kind of wrapping up here. I know you, Pastor David, you got a meeting to
get
to.
I do. I got things to do, man. Sure. All right.
Hey, look, we're making it hard on you, all right?
We
to
are.
Make it easy for the podcast, okay?
Yeah.
Yes. Are you willing to sacrifice for Beyond Sunday? Come on.
I have an appointment. I got things. You'd be making other people sacrifice on my behalf. That's
fair enough. Fair enough. So I want to just identify a little bit more, how are we making this hard on outsiders and what needs to change about that? Because I think that's what really matters as we have these conversations. Because you mentioned like worship itself.
Yeah.
Are there other things we're doing as a faith community that is making it easy on us, hard on outsiders, and how can we flip that?
There was a really interesting congregation one time that had a wedding policy where they charged their members to have weddings in the building and did it for free for anybody outside.
Huh. Yeah.
I think that's the kind of thought that we need to have of what is our space for and what does it mean to be a member versus what does it mean to be welcoming other people into this community. Now, I don't... Your wedding policy really, I mean, I don't think that's your evangelism tool. If that's your primary evangelism tool, I think we've got other things to have. But I think it's a mindset of how are we thinking
about
that.
Well, if you have a school attached and you're giving discounts to members, maybe you can say, how can we give discounts to those that are non-members?
Yeah.
You know, and how can we, and expect our people to pay more because that's the calling that they have to be a part of this. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, and it's not just a financial burden either, right? I think there are... There are ways that we can very intentionally increase the challenge to our members, increasing this. There is a level of commitment that is expected when you're a part of this community. And I think that helpful challenge, people have an opportunity to respond, right? Mm-hmm. And some people are going to choose not to, but then identifying that and blessing that and saying, okay, that's all right. But then understand that this
this challenge is going to move us in a certain direction. And hopefully that by our taking on that challenge, we're going to make it easier for others to come into the space yeah. in one way or another, yeah. whether that's the challenge of worship or whether that's the challenge of being with ideologies that I don't 100% agree with all the time, or whether that's whatever that challenge might be for you, right? To be a congregation that genuinely makes it possible for others to come into the faith in Jesus, it should cost you something, because it cost the disciples their lives. It cost, you know, many, many people, you know, their property and everything else like that in the beginning stages of Christianity. But because Christianity has become mainstream, you know, right now it's easy to say I'm a Christian. Mm-hmm. It's easy to do that. Mm-hmm. It's easy for me to walk into any church in the United States and say, yeah, cool. I want to be here. I don't want to be here. Right.
Yep.
And it shouldn't necessarily be that easy. Mm. It should cost us something.
Yeah. Great.
There's a cost to discipleship. But what is that cost?
It's Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
It is. Well, he's not the cost, but he wrote that.
Yeah. He did write that book. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of boring, actually.
It's not like a page turner.
Right. It's a bit dry.
Bitch read.
It's no Harry Potter, but yeah. You know, it's yeah. But it's got really good stuff in it. It's got meaningful stuff. Yeah. Life Together, I think, is better, personally. But that's a...
He's Lutheran. That's why Lutherans like him.
I mean, that's not the only reason we like him.
I think he also is involved in the plot to assassinate Hitler.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean...
And he failed at it, so...
Well, I mean, wasn't even good at that.
Right. Lots to love, though.
Yeah. I mean, the theory was his faith compelled him to continue. So he was in the United States and had the opportunity to stay in the United States and would have been safe in the United States.
Yeah.
And his faith compelled him to go back, say, I'm not going to leave my brothers and sisters who are there. And ultimately, he said his faith led him to be a part of this plot. Mm-hmm. And
And cost him his life.
And cost him his life, eventually.
Fascinating life. I think his books are fine.
Yeah. His books are probably popular because of how he died.
Sure. Because of a fascinating life. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. I think that gives us a good wrapping up point.
Yeah. So, hey, if you like what you heard today, if you thought it was easy listening, or if you thought, I don't know, what's the opposite of easy listening?
Screamo.
If you thought it was screamo, there it is. Whatever you, however you felt about this episode, we hope that you are willing to invite a friend or challenge a friend appropriately to listen to this podcast as well. Share it out wherever you can through Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, all of the places. You can find all of our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com. And we want to hear what you think. What you know? How do you think Christianity is easy or hard for you in your own experience? Send that to us at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
We can make being a listener of Beyond Sunday harder.
We could definitely do that. We could find a way.
Yeah. We can play
the
xylophone in between this.
Sure, sure.
I don't know. That might be soothing.
We could change the volume randomly in the podcast. Or be like a song that has like a siren in there. I hate this song so much. You're just driving and all of a sudden.
Yeah.
We can put some sound effects in
here. For anybody who didn't, because you're all listening on a podcast, Patrick gave a very startled look in the midst of that.
We could put tiger roars in this.
There you go.
So you're driving around with your tiger.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, what's that?
You think it's going to eat you? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, there you go. All right. Thanks, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Bye, everybody.